everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal healthcare. Today, I am thrilled to be speaking with Vivian Manning Schaffel. Vivian is joining us from Connecticut, where she currently works as a freelance writer, regularly contributing to Shondaland.com and having written for Catapult Story, The Today Show, Medium, and more. Aside from her writing career, Vivian is a mother, wife, and a spinal champion. Her spinal champion story spans 17 years and begins with raising young children. Vivian's story speaks to the challenges of having multiple spinal surgeries, including navigating childcare post-surgery, mental health, and what she describes as traumatizing levels of pain. With those challenges in mind, Vivian comes to offer encouragement to other patients through sharing her story of hope and healing. You'll have to tune in to hear just how Vivian's journey plays out. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Vivian's story. 17 years ago, when Vivian's son was just a one-year-old, she decided to bring him to a Mommy and Me music class, which involved dancing around the room. She was enjoying her time with her son until she picked him up and felt something had gone terribly wrong in her back.
I went to pick him up and I had to stop what I was doing because I was in excruciating pain. It was so difficult to get my son back into a stroller. And then on top of it, I needed to stroll him back home, which was about a 20-minute walk across a bridge to my apartment. I had no idea how I was going to be able to care for my son the rest of the day. I'm pretty sure I put on the TV and just let him sit there until my husband could figure out how to get out of work and get home.
Upon diagnosis, it was discovered that Vivian had a moderate herniated disc at L4, L5. She was treated with a cortisone shot, which reduced her pain, and given Percocets to be able to avoid surgery. What wasn't revealed at that time was that Vivian also had degenerative disc disease.
For some context, I had been in a car accident at the age of 23. And I remember being told back then by an acupuncturist that my neck, the curve of my neck, had reversed from my head breaking a windshield. And at that time, I really didn't have anyone in my corner who knew enough about spine to tell me that this was going to be a lifelong problem for me. And with respect to the pain in my lower back, I had scoliosis. Didn't know that that was going to affect me later on in life as well.
A few years after the dance class incident, when Vivian's son was now 3 years old, and when Vivian was expecting her daughter, she began to experience excruciating pain again.
I couldn't have the type of MRI I needed to figure out what was going on with the disc in my back because I was pregnant. So once again, I was given a vat of Percocet, which I did not take very much of because I didn't want to. I was pregnant. Fortunately, I rested and had to call out of work for a little bit so I could move again. You know, with time, it eased until I had my daughter.
During her labor and delivery, Vivian's spinal issues reemerged. Her daughter arrived 5 weeks early, and a failed epidural during the birth revealed a herniated disc.
I was pretty much fine once I got the second epidural and had my daughter. But 3 weeks later, when I went to the grocery store to buy a few cans of tomato sauce to make dinner for my parents, I suddenly just could not walk. It felt as if I had a knife in my back going down my leg. I had to call my husband to meet me at the grocery store, which is 8 blocks away, to help me get home. It was a nightmare trying to navigate, caring for a toddler, and figuring out what was wrong with me. So they finally diagnosed me with a severely herniated disc, and I had to have a laminectomy and discectomy at that point. But navigating the whole surgical experience was something of a nightmare because we didn't have family around and I couldn't pick up my daughter. So we had to hire someone to help us. She was all of 5 pounds, mind you. And as you can imagine, hiring someone is very expensive and not covered by insurance. But it was the only way that after 6 weeks, you know, my poor husband was taking care of me post back surgery, a 4-year-old and a newborn premature baby at home. And none of that childcare is covered by insurance.
Vivian was experiencing so much pain, the regular activities such as walking a few blocks to the grocery store became unbearable. Caring for her children was impossible. She had hired help to help her manage her young children, and at the recommendation of a friend, saw a surgeon in the city who recommended for her a laminectomy and discectomy at L4, L5. Vivian underwent the surgery with her very young children at home. This was a very disruptive time for her. The surgery worked and kept her comfortable for a few years. Things changed in 2010. When Vivian's pain returned in 2010, she experienced the pain higher up in her spine, and a discectomy and laminectomy was conducted. A few years later, in 2015, Vivian lost some feeling in her limbs and felt the most intense pain she had ever felt, like a knife in her upper back.
In 2015, my surgeon went in with the intention of doing a fusion, a single level fusion. But what he ended up having to do was a 2-level fusion and an artificial disc on the 3rd level, because that's how bad my cervical spine was at the time. I was so grateful to learn about this artificial disc technology because I understood that it would preserve my ability to move and drive a car and do all the things that I needed to do. But it was expensive because the disc was not covered by insurance. So after each surgery, I found myself surprised by how long each recovery actually took. When you have a fusion, they're like, 6 weeks, you'll be back to normal. It's not 6 weeks, not even by a stretch. I wished I had had better expectations, or I just wish I had had a more realistic outlook or more information about what my recovery was realistically going to look like with my lifestyle. With that said, I'm trying to fight off. I haven't had surgery since, fortunately, 2-2-2, but I'm very careful about what I do and do not do to preserve my spinal health.
Over the years, Vivian had 4 surgeries, and today shares with us that she does have spinal arthritis from the years of healing from operations. She knows her limitations. She can't work out the way some others do. She can't do a spin class, and she can't ride a roller coaster. She had those experiences before and is grateful to have new ways of taking care of her body.
I still try to work out because I know that exercise is the one thing, movement is the one thing that I want to hold on to for the rest of my life if I can. So I do Pilates-based exercises and other low-impact exercises, low-impact cardio, such as an elliptical machine, to try to stay moving every single day. I also use my own body weight rather than doing excessive weight-bearing exercises because I'm so terrified that I'm going to re-injure myself. So I don't generally lift things over 20 pounds, 15 pounds over bags of groceries is probably even too much. Like, I really try to take care of myself. And I have another disc out now that I know about. So I'm trying to stave off surgery for as long as possible. I just take the proper precautions and live my life accordingly.
Vivian approaches her spine health journey with gratitude, acknowledging both the difficult aspects of surgery and spinal challenges, as well as thankfulness for the people who supported her through her journey.
That pain that I experienced before the fusion and the pain that I experienced after I had my daughter was so intense. It's probably one of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had in my life because there's no way of alleviating it. You can't lay down or get into a better position. I told a friend, I would rather give birth again without an epidural rather than experience that pain. And that's really saying something. But today, you know, I'm really grateful for the small things. That's what this experience has taught me. You know, I can move, I can dance around my kitchen, I can feel my feet. You know, I lost feeling on permanently on a couple of fingers in my right hand, because that was one of the, some of the nerves from my cervical spine never did really fully recover. But it's a small price to pay. I can still move my fingers well enough to type and do my job. So I'm very grateful. And above all, I'm grateful to my husband, who multiple times held down the fort with me, caring for me post-op and having two kids to raise at home. That was the most difficult time in our entire life, I could say, thus far. And I'm very grateful for our friends and family who flocked around us with support at the time, even if it was like bringing us a meal or everything. You know, you really can't go through this situation alone.
Vivian ends her tale with some advice that I think is incredibly important. Pay attention to how you're feeling.
Your emotional health. I once told my surgeon that he should have a social worker on board to talk to patients post-op, because having such an intense restriction of movement for such a long period of time, and also the whole signing away the risks before spinal surgery are huge, and it's a lot to wrap your mind around. So the trauma can all be very intense, and there's a lot of stress that comes with all of that risk. I know so many people who have avoided surgery like the plague. So if you're brave enough to do it, you should definitely congratulate yourself and know that you're not going to be running around in a month. Like, whatever you do, set up your life so you have an understanding that you're going to very slowly and incrementally and very gradually get back to your life. But you will get back to your life.
Vivian, I love how honestly you tell your story of healing and recovery. I know you're a storyteller for your profession. You've done such a great job painting this picture of life, raising young kids, dealing with pain, going through surgeries. I'd love to know, have you found unique healing in sharing your story over the years? And have you found community in telling your story? How does that play out for you? One of the things you talk about is having your tribe, you know, your sort of support system that's taken you through this.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, as you say, I'm a storyteller by trade, right? So I tend to mine my life for things to write about. And it's very cathartic. I just wrote an article about how cathartic art is and how it can truly heal you mentally when you share your experience with other people. I feel like when I first found out that I needed spinal surgery, there really wasn't that much out there. And all I was finding online were nightmare stories about people who didn't recover, people who were struggling through botched surgeries, issues. And I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified, which is why I'm so grateful you guys are doing what you're doing, because you're sharing stories of recovery. And that's what people need to hear when they're facing spinal surgery.
Yeah, I personally relate to that as well. I'm a spinal champion myself and going through surgery, just the fear of what was going to happen. And, you know, as you point out, that's, I haven't thought about it that way, but just, you know, the risks, knowing that there are risks that you know, it's every time you have a surgery, there are risks involved. But, you know, you look at the pain and the disability and you think, I can't live my life like this. I've got to try to change this. I've got to go through with this. So having a supportive community, having a supportive family, you know, friends around you, other spinal champions that you can talk to or reach out to, really helps get through those scary times, I think. And that's what we're trying to do here is create a community where others can hear these stories and say, you know, I think I'm going to be okay. You know, I'm going to get through this. It's going to be okay. And everybody's story is different, right? Everybody's journey is different. Our genetics make up a lot of how we do. You know, some people have more arthritis than others. Some people have degenerative. You know, it's just part of it is just how we're made. The recovery is different for everybody. Everyone's journey is different and unique. You know, one of the things we talk about, and Vivian, you and I were discussing a little bit, is this idea of making sure that you have a great relationship with your doctor.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's so, so important that you feel like your doctor is your advocate. And any doctor who has a cookie cutter approach to spine is probably not the right doctor really for anybody, because there's no cookie cutter approach to this.
No human being is one size fits all. You know, you really don't know how fast your recovery is going to be as opposed to your friends. You really don't know who's going to have recurrent issues as opposed to who will. You know, I don't know. You would know better than I if there's surgery out there. Like, I wish there was some sort of BRCA gene thing that you could find out right. about your spine, so you could kind of stay ahead of it and understand what role genetics play, because I believe that genetics probably play a huge role in that. My mother has always had horrible back issues. My grandmother had a hunchback, or like a curved spine.
Kyphosis. Yep.
Yeah, she did have, that's the word. Thank you. She had kyphosis. And so I was always aware of the fact that this might come for me too. Fortunately, I don't have kyphosis, but I do have my mom's degenerative back. Like, this is just what's happening. And she struggled with chronic pain her whole life. Back then, she would take Doane's pills. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the 60s, 70s, you know, you'd get these bottles of Doane's pills, and who knows what was in them? Speed, you know. Who knows? Who knows what my mom did to get through the day? But, you know, it was very difficult for her. She's in a wheelchair now. So.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness, Vivian.
Yeah, very sadly.
Well, this is the new frontier. So, you know, the scientists in spine, and we're working very closely with members of our medical and scientific board who are beginning to look at the genetics associated with, you know, spine conditions, whether it's degenerative disc conditions, spinal arthritis, and really taking a look at the genetic proclivity and looking for biomarkers. So that is the next frontier in spine. And it's sort of like, well, why hasn't that happened yet? And, you know, Vivian, we were talking about how this, the entire field of spine has just exploded in the last 15 years. And technologies have gotten better. Surgeries have gotten better. Minimally invasive has gotten better. Biologics have gotten better. Pain management techniques and methods have gotten better. The Spine Health Foundation did a program recently on alternatives in pain management, including CBD and medical marijuana, and looking at these other treatments that are out there, the role of acupuncture. I mean, there's just so much that hasn't been discussed or is not in the public dialogue.
I am a huge proponent of both, by the way. CBD cream has saved my life, and acupuncture, actually. And you'd appreciate hearing this. My surgeon's wife is an acupuncturist.
Wow.
And toward the end, my last surgery, she was kind of prescribed, and I've always believed in the efficacy of acupuncture because I've experienced it in my life. It's been very, very helpful in terms of recovering from surgery and other health issues that I've had. But it was interesting that he actually set it up as a component of his recovery process. You know, if you're in pain afterward, go see my wife. She will take care of you. And surely enough, she made a big difference for me. She was fantastic.
That's awesome.
I go to an acupuncturist, as I now have a different acupuncturist who's closer to where I used to live. And I will travel back into Brooklyn to see her. I call her my magician. She's phenomenal. But it really can help, because what acupuncture does is it calms nerve pain by convincing your muscles to calm down when they're spasming, you know, and that's the most important thing. It helps with inflammation as well.
Right. I'm so happy to hear that. I think what I'm hearing in this conversation reminds me of the practice that I went to. My surgeon's practice also offers acupuncture in their clinic. I mean, it's an offering that they give to patients. And the idea here is this sort of multidisciplinary approach to treating spine, right? It's dealing with the pain, dealing with the recovery, dealing with the surgery itself. And it's a multidisciplinary approach. You've got to have the physical therapy. You've got to have pain control. You've got to have the movement. You've got to have the right surgery for the right situation. You've had four, Vivian. I want to talk a little bit about your discectomy and laminectomy in your back. And then in your neck, you had a hybrid procedure.
Yes.
In the foundation, we did a big program on artificial disc replacement and this idea of hybrid surgeries. Again, you know, we would just want to encourage people to be able to have these conversations with their surgeons and know that there are multimodal ways of approaching problems in spine. And so you had two levels fused and one level with a disc. Tell me a little more about that.
Yeah. Well, initially, you know, based on my films or my MRI, my doctor was like, I have to do a single level fusion, but I have to be honest with you. I need a better look at what's going on in there to see what's causing you so much pain, because he knew I was really suffering. For me to just call him up, like at that point, I had him on speed dial. So it was like, oh, it's me again. What's up? How's everybody? You know, I became best friends with his office manager and all the things. You know, you get tight with your spinal surgeon if your spinal surgeon is a great guy. And luckily mine was. So, you know, I actually had to cancel a vacation to have my my fusion surgery. I was supposed to go on vacation in mere days with my family. And
oh man,
he took me into his office after the MRI and he said, you have two discs on your spinal cord. And if there's like, if you hit your head on this plane or something happens, that could be it for you. Like quadriplegia.
Oh
like,
my God.
See you later. I got to get in there. So I canceled my vacation. We planned for this emergency kind of spinal surgery situation. I ended up having a two level fusion and an artificial disc. So, you know, we discussed the artificial disc aspect as a possibility before I went into surgery. So I was prepared to deal with that. And actually kind of looking forward to it. At the time, it wasn't as pervasive as it is now. You know, you can't go on Instagram and follow spinal surgeons, which yes, I do. But, you know, if you go on now and you see the advances that they've made, even since I've last had my fusion in artificial disc surgery, now I wish I had three artificial discs in my neck as opposed to being fused, because fusion can, as you know, the risk with fusion is arthritis, right? And also it limits your movement a little bit. So it was a lot bigger. It was more of a job than he thought it was going to be. And so when I woke up, he told me, you know, what had happened. And he was like, man, it was a mess in there. Like I really had to go and clean some stuff up. But once you go through something like that, you know, you just realize how much you have to be grateful for. Mainly that every day I'm aware of the fact, acutely aware of the fact that I'm not in that insane, mind-numbing pain.
Yeah. And that you've got motion in your neck. And Vivian, do you think that car accident in your 20s had something to do with the disc herniations that appeared later in your life?
Oh, absolutely. And at the time, who told me who I could potentially have problems with? Because a guy hit me, like he hit my car. And I think I maybe got like $10,000 out of that settlement. Because I was in my early 20s. I had no one advocating for me. I couldn't rely on my parents in that way to kind of look out for me. But my acupuncturist at the time was like, you should be getting a hell of a lot more because you're going to have a lot of trouble when you get into your 40s.
Wow.
And he just knew like the shape of your spine has changed. And I was what, 22? So I'm like, oh, okay. I just need to get back to work so I can pay my bills. Like my car insurance bill is coming. Like I wasn't,
right.
I was young and, you know, financially responsible for myself. So I didn't really have the luxury of time to be able to address these other things. But I took a holistic approach to my recovery even back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing that you had an acupuncturist back then. And I think, you know, you mentioned being young. One of the things at the foundation that we are going to be looking to do through our campaign in 2022 is raising awareness of spine for young people. Because I think kids just don't think about kids, college kids, high school kids, young people really just don't think about their neck or back. And they think, oh yeah, back problems, that's an old person's thing. Actually, in our society where kids are doing more intensity sports at younger ages, they're improperly weightlifting, they're learning improper weightlifting techniques when they're in school and carrying that into their young lives, we're seeing epidemic levels of spondylolisthesis from improper activity with kids. And so we think that there's really a need to teach kids, here are some things to think about when you're thinking about your spine and taking care of it as you grow and as you age. And it's something that's really hard, I think, for kids to think about. but something that I think we need to begin to start raising awareness of.
Oh, absolutely. I can't look at my kids hunched over their phones without thinking, like, sit up straight. You know, now I realize I sound like my mother, but it's a little bit more intense these days because aren't kids developing legit spinal issues from being hunched over?
The actual technical term, the medical term for that is technic. It's literally called technic. It's the condition of hunching over your iPhone, your phone or your computer or your game system where you're literally, your shoulders are drawn in and your neck is bent, and it's a condition and it's called technic, and it's a problem. And what we're trying to tell people is that our messages on education with why does posture matter? It's not that you have to sit with proper posture all day long, but you have to be aware of your posture. So if you're slouching for a little bit, that's okay. Change it. You know, set a timer during your day. Every 30 minutes, move, change your position, shift your position. If you're at a computer, hunched over your computer, set that timer and every 30 minutes, stand up and stretch and move. Go get a drink of water. Hydration is really important for your spine. Go get some water. Move your position. Don't hold any one position for too long. And that's a big educational message that we try to push out on all of our channels.
Right, right. My daughter had scoliosis at a young age. And fortunately, as she's grown, her spine is straightened out a little bit. But one thing that her doctor, her orthopedic doctor had told her was, look, when you've been on a computer or on a screen for an hour, go stand against a wall with your, like, as if you're under arrest with your arms spread next to it.
Do the butterfly stretch the wall.
Yeah. And she was big about that. But going back to what you were saying about sports, like, I can't even watch a football game because it's very traumatic for me. All I think of is, like, what's this spine going to look like in 30 years?
I know.
Like, this poor guy's going to have so much surgery.
I know. Oh my God, I know. Pain.
Like, I can't. It's traumatic for me to even look at that stuff. And I see everything in terms of medical bills now. Like, people watch, you remember Jackass, that TV show,
yes,
whatever, where people are like running around and jumping off of bikes and into piles of garbage, just doing like stunt work. And I'm like, you're insane, because I'm thinking, you know, that's another $200,000. That's another $300,000.
I know.
You know, I think of that and I think of, like, I wince just thinking of how much pain that kid's going to be in later on in life.
I know. It's like, you have no idea how much that's going to cost you one day.
Yes, exactly. So I hope you enjoy whatever you want on that bet right now, because you should probably have charged five times that.
Right. Right. Vivian, I want to talk a little bit for just a couple of minutes here about sort of this idea of patient expectation. You kind of touched on that in your story. We are involved in what we're calling the patient expectation study here. So we're looking at, can early education, preoperative education, help people recover better? And the studies are showing that the more people know about their surgery and what is being done in their surgery and what they need to do after surgery, the better the outcomes are. So I'd like for you to talk with me a little bit about what expectations you had going into your surgeries and what you think you could have done to have a different expectation of the outcome or to manage those expectations.
Oh, thank you for asking. I think the biggest, like I told you, I love my surgeon. He's a great guy, but he was a bit casual and just not, I think this is pervasive among spinal surgeons in general, because
they're optimists.
They're
right?
Very optimistic. They want to sell you on the best possible outcome. And I had spoken to a different spinal surgeon at one point when I was getting a cortisone shot from him. And he said, oh, I had a patient get on a plane and fly out of here after a fusion the next day. Cause he was telling me then that I needed a fusion, mm-hmm, but I wasn't ready to have said fusion. And it wasn't my doctor who I wanted to go back to, but this guy was incredible with cortisone shots. So I went for that. And I think that kind of mistakenly gave me the expectation that I was going to be like up and at him in no time.
Mm.
And I think when they say 6 weeks, they mean a hard 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, they don't mean you're going to be up and doing a jig. Yes, the part about being in less pain when you wake up, almost as soon as you realize what's going on and the anesthesia wears off, is 100% correct, because whatever was on your nerve isn't on your nerve anymore. So you do feel some relief, but that pain does come back, and it takes a long time for the pain receptors of your body to understand that they're not being compressed anymore.
Right.
So, you know, pain has nerves have memory, as you know.
It's retraining the brain on that.
Right. So it takes a while for your brain to kind of understand that it's not experiencing the same trauma on the inside that it was. So there were many days where I was like, oh my God, it didn't work. Like, I would be 4 weeks in and I would perhaps have overdone it a little bit that day. The first thing I want to say is that if you experience pain after a few weeks, maybe don't panic. It's probably just your body telling you that you did a little bit too much that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on the level of pain that you're in, of course, you should always talk to your doctor, but it's normal for weeks to go by and for you to have a resurgence of some level of pain.
Right.
And that's something that people don't tell you. So when you do have that pain, you've basically aggravated the muscles around where it is. You know, you've got to think about it. They're cutting through muscles. They're cutting through all kinds of things to get to your spine. So all of that tissue has to heal around. And that takes a lot of time. I think the recovery is actually more like 3 months, to be honest, till you feel like you can go back and do things normally without sweating the small stuff. It's just very small incremental steps toward recovery. So 6 weeks, you can do stuff. You can drive a car, you know, you can go back and walk around, you know, you can do things pretty much.
And that's when the fusion is set. Really, it's 6 weeks to get that fusion set, right? I mean, that's what they talk about.
Right. But I mean, it's normal for pain to come back beyond that,
mm-hmm.
to some degree, not the degree that you first had the surgery, but like to some degree.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that that's part of the healing process. And I think if they were made aware of that at the get-go, you wouldn't have so much fear of re-injuring yourself.
Right. In your post-op time.
Right.
I remember that for myself being something that was really hard for me as I was going through physical therapy and just being afraid to do the exercises. And I didn't want to do the exercises at home without the therapist being there because I was afraid I would do them wrong and I would hurt myself. And it's that fear of re-injuring and it is traumatizing.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. You literally are afraid of making a wrong move.
You are.
All day, every day, you know, whether it's sitting on the toilet, you know, you have to keep your head like straight and your back perfectly straight, you know, even the little things right after you have surgery, the little things.
And that was what really prompted me to work with the team here to build the Spinal Champion program and this podcast. It's those little things that you want to talk to people about that your surgeon doesn't necessarily talk about with you. It's the little things.
I think every spinal surgeon should have like a patient advocate on staff that someone can call post-op, preferably someone who's been there, who can hear you, who can help guide you.
Right. Or send them to the National Spine Health Foundation. We'll put them in touch, right?
Yes. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to share my story. And I hope in doing so, even if one person listens to it and they can relate to it somehow, I'm just glad for the opportunity.
Well, thank you, Vivian. You've shared some really beautiful things that you're grateful about, despite the trauma you've been through. You've overcome. You're enjoying your life. You're taking such a balanced approach to talking about the difficult trauma, while also, you know, giving hope and inspiration as you tell your story. I guess if there's one last piece of advice or information or inspiration that you'd want to give, what would you say?
Well, it's funny. I was just thinking about that. Before I had my fusion in my neck, my cervical fusion, I think I might have posted about it on Facebook or something like that. And a friend that I knew through business colleagues over time, but didn't know very well, messaged me out of the blue. And he said, listen, I had the surgery. I can tell you exactly what to expect, like really what to expect. So please reach out with any questions. I'm very, very happy to help you. My point is, reach out to other people who have had this surgery that you're about to have, because they are the best person to guide you through the process. Granted, take their advice based on their experience. It might be different from your own, but somebody who's been through it will really tell you how it is. You're not going to be able to get that advice. The keto community is just so important. And whatever you do, don't go down a Reddit rabbit hole. You're better off just finding real people who has actually had the surgery that you're going to have, because that is the person who's going to be able to answer your questions in a very candid way, your real questions, and give you the opportunity to realistically wrap your mind around what to expect in terms of your recovery.
That was beautiful. That was awesome.
Thank you.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of Spinal Champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.